voted for statehood because I really think that the Native people should have been consulted as to what they wanted, and they weren't, and they were left out of it. And it was a railroad job, I think, when they got statehood. And I think that there's some reconciliation there that needs to be caught up with. I do, however, hope and pray for a unity amongst the people all over what we call now the territorial state, with the present boundaries that, as we now have them. Our affinity with each other in south, from southeast to Kotzebue to Nome to the interior southwest, the delta. Somehow we all need to sort of hang together in the future, because if we form walls, then we're starting the foundations for divisiveness and war in the future. If we identify who we are and we understand who we are and we have our own uniqueness in hand, then I think with that self-esteem and that strength, we can go out and cooperate as a whole unified country up here. And I guess that's my little sentimental wish from having been born and raised up here, is that somehow we can keep this whole land together, even though we are so different and unique and we have so many specialties. I've made it a life study to know and love Alaska better, and at the foundation of my life is the desire to understand the processes of change here and to help deliver Alaska's future. I see the future as one whereby level-headed leaders will be called upon to navigate Alaskan society through the rough seas and the reefs to safety. I pray that this ship will arrive in one piece to safety, and I want peace, and I see where we have now the opportunity to really get in trouble and end up having a lot of violence like they have in the Middle East or maybe in Ireland or someplace like that, and I would like to avoid that. I would like to look ahead at being able to coexist, and I think that the Native people need to be commended for their tolerance and their patience and their maturity in dealing with the so-called savages from the south who came up here over the years and just stomped and intruded, and also brought with them many benefits which need to be acknowledged. And I think that the Native people are some of the most remarkable and intelligent people in the world, and I really support their need to be disentangled from the multinational corporations and the sort of like multinational type of thinking that comes in and is bringing with it lots of pollution and lots of economic complications. And actually, when you look at the Western world now, and you can sort of see that it's on a self-destructive course, and I think that the Native people are real smart to try and disentangle themselves from that dinosaur as it lunges itself over the cliff to self-destruction, and I support that. In order to have a strong integrated whole, you need to have strong components, and that's why every group needs to identify their values, decide who they want to live with and who they do not want to live with, decide what they want to do with the fish in the game as a trust responsibility. They make those decisions. I would like to see maybe a little more discrimination in Alaska as far as who's going to be doing business up here and if they're worthy and fit. I don't know why we couldn't formalize some kind of a export policy. If some corporation, for example, came up here and had a really bad track record in other third world countries, for example, where we could deny them access to doing business in Alaska until they had cleaned up their act, for example. Or maybe if you're in a region and you have a lot of criminal type people or people who are just not proving themselves worthy to associate in your company, you should be able to have the legal means to export them. it used to be a traditional way of dealing with ostracism and so forth, you know, as a legal method of dealing with antisocial behavior. The Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act had a tremendous impact on my life and my family's life, even though I'm sure it's never been articulated, at least I've never heard it. I was raised in a racially mixed environment in a neighborhood in Fairbanks, and I've traveled and lived all over the state in different villages, mostly in the interior. And I think my family was respectful to Native peoples. At least I never heard any slang or slur that would be disrespectful in my family. But the years following the land claim settlement brought about a lot of divisiveness. My once unified universe of Alaska, maybe that was a sentimental delusion that never really existed, but a dawning realization set in that there are fundamental racial, legal, and historical differences between myself and my Native playmates and my Native friends. My own family became very polarized in opposition to each other on these views about Native rights and entitlements. And over the years, there has been a lot of discussion and argument and inward soul-searching in an attempt to understand these changes. It's not only the Anilka that's brought about these changes, but airplanes and improved transportation and communications and the oil pipeline has caused nothing short of a revolution in my homeland. I don't have much more to say except for I would like to read a little bit from a letter that my grandfather wrote to my mother in 1950. His name was Anton Anderson, and he was mayor of Anchorage for a while, and he also was responsible for surveying a lot of the streets around here and did a lot around Alaska. And this is just a taste of what my culture as a white Alaskan, native Alaskan, I guess you could call it. He says, "You asked me to try and describe the fraternity of old-time Alaskans, that invisible and uncharted fraternity of the North, that holds no initiations, collects no dues, has no roster, holds no conventions, has no officers, is without a leader, and yet is as active, perhaps more active, than any organization in Alaska. In fact, there is no other organization in Alaska that can even be compared to it. Undoubtedly, you will remark that there must be qualifications and some form of application." This is to the Brotherhood of the North, they call it Fraternity of Old-Time Alaskans. "There are. There are severe qualifications, also unwritten, yet they are there nevertheless. Nobody set them up, nobody has or could define them, because they are too broad and too wide for description. One really begins his entry exams the first day he arrives in Alaska and is subject by review from the floor for every action during his stay here. It is the Brotherhood of the Wilds, governed by tolerance and an indescribable code of honesty of thought and action. If it has faults, its main one is over-toleration, motivated by the universal desire to accept a candidate as he is, not as he was or what he will be. Disobedience to its unwritten code is punished by unorganized ostracism that follows as natural as darkness follows daylight. The funny thing about it is that so many candidates fail to qualify and are mentally blackballed out of it. There are no secret handshakes or passwords. Such restrictions are only for the lesser fraternities. How does one know its members? Oh, you will know them if you belong without any introduction. They will be the ones who step in when all the world steps out. You will find them on the trail and in the taverns, on the tundra or in the tabernacle. They will make you their confession and you will make them yours. They will go down to the depths of degradation maybe, but still having that tolerance and the desire of honesty will not lose their qualifications. nationality, age, or sex are unknown barriers. This organization is too big for such trivialities. Chichacos seek in vain for its open door and leave the country shaking their fist at the mountains. The nearest one that ever described it was when Robert Service in his poem said, "It's ever the law of the Yukon, and ever she makes it plain. Send not your weak or your feeble, but send me your strong and your sane." Read that poem and you will glean what I mean. You might, in the words of Byron, be able to feel what I cannot express, yet cannot quite conceal. And so now, my dear daughter, you have some ideas of the Brotherhood of the North. That's just a small glimpse. I really feel strongly that in this power struggle, the Native people must be really relentless in establishing their lands and their governments and their institutions and their values and their religions and spirituality. Right now, there are so many people in the world who are making long-range plans for Alaska, and I just think that you can't get your work done too soon. One thing I would like to draw your attention to is in the fisheries, which is where I'm most involved. The state of Alaska put in a limited entry program whereby you would need to have a permit, a limited entry permit, in order to be able to fish commercially. And the state is only a 25-year-old youngster. And the Native people have been fishing continuously in the Alaska waters for thousands of years. And I also feel that my constitutional rights were abridged by the limited entry law. And I suggest you look very closely at that law and decide for yourselves, and also I am doing the same way, whether to allow some Johnny-come-lately bureaucrats to come in and separate me from my fishery, especially since we're talking about survival. That's all.
Thanks very much. Thank you. Mr. Berger, thank you for coming to us to give the Alaska Native people that have chosen to live in the Anchorage area with the blessings, hopefully, of the Dena'ina, the Tenaya speaking people. I think that appropriately it should have been the K'nik, the Iklutna, the K'naitse people who should have been speaking first. But maybe they're saving the best for last, since this is their country. I've been a visitor here in the Anchorage area. I am Clinkett from Sitka. I've been visiting here, as I said, for approximately 14 and a half years. And perhaps that is why I can say that I'm very encouraged by what is going on with the Alaska Native Land Claim Settlement Act, particularly in that I'm a visitor here. I can take a close look at, as an outsider, of what is happening here in the Anchorage area. The pains, the paths that particular people have chosen, living as very well-to-do Native people, has really torn at the very structure of Alaska Native communities. What's happening here, I don't believe, is any different than what is happening in other parts of the state. The more recent things that I can recall is the slapping of people in the face, the degrading of people through media, albeit just paper passed out in the streets, the gossiping, the tearing at the very structure, the very foundation of us as Native people. As I said, I came up here about 14 and a half years ago to attend school. Almost very immediately, the lease sale was going on for Prudhoe Bay area. And very happily, very proudly, I can say I was there protesting against this lease sale and had been attending some protesting of these multinationals, these oil companies that may very well be in control if things are not changed by 1991. And I say that very hesitatingly by 1991, because the legalities, that's fine. Changing the legalities, changing the law is fine. But we've got a moral obligation to the young people, those that are born after December 18th, 71. They are a group of disinherited people. I've been involved with education systems here in the Anchorage area with the AFN Education Department years past, and I'm now currently working in an alcohol treatment program. The people born since 71, again, need to be acknowledged. We need to have special acknowledgments for these people. Again, the legalities of whatever it takes to acknowledge them according to the land claims, that's fine. That isn't going to answer their questions of why. Why did this happen? We have a moral obligation to our young people to acknowledge them. I believe that there are some special arrangements being made by particular groups, clans of people that will do just this, acknowledge them. The difficulties we've had, you know, I'm pretty young right now. The difficulties I've had in growing up as an Alaska Native person here in the Anchorage area and in Sitka have been very trying on me. And in looking at the young people that will be coming up and talking with their older brothers and sisters, you know, they have no idea how to talk with their young that have been born, their brothers and sisters that have been born after December 71. They can't explain why they receive the very minimal amount of money that they are receiving. They can't explain that why they're receiving this, and the young aren't. The tearing at the very structure again, you know, was very, very disappointing. The spirit of the people, I believe, is getting stronger, and we need to acknowledge the young because that is the source. That is the source of where we will be. And 91 is not going to end this process that is going on. We will be alive. The young will be alive. And there will always be some questions, some differences of cultures. The concerns, again, of the legalities. Yeah. I feel that a great steps need to be done to ensure the Native-owned stock after 1991. I spoke that I was from Southeast, from Sitka. I'm a shareholder of Sea Alaska, a shareholder with Shietika, and those have brought has had a tremendous impact on me, because I am related to people with the Kootsnawu from Angoon. The territorial battles, over who's going to own this land, who gets the timber rights in Admiralty Island, has torn at the very, very base and has been an ongoing battle because there has been traditional acknowledgement of who owns, who controls that area. And yet the land claims has chosen to say, well, you folks have this right here and you share it with these other people, even though you know in your hearts who that belongs to because of the requirements of the land selections, the requirements of those who have the decision-making power, has torn at the very, very family basis, the very structure of a lot of families, the tearing at the people. As I said, as an outsider here, it gets very frustrating. I think it's good. It is bringing the young together. It is opening a number of doors through the, the financial aid of a number of these corporations. A lot of elders conferences have been able to take place. A lot of movements, the spirit movement up in the Nana region is very encouraging. The young people being pulled together through the Alaska Federation of Natives, they're able to sit with each other, to acknowledge each other, but more to get to look around and see that they are not alone. The power of the people, I believe, is getting stronger through a result of a number of these such gatherings as you've been holding throughout the state. Very appreciative. And to be able to sit in peace and talk with each other, let the concerns be known, is very important. But one of the concerns, like I said, you know, I have a 5-year-old daughter over here who is not a shareholder. She's not a shareholder. In 71, when the enrollment was beginning, we would hear from those that were in power, those that were the, quote, native leaders, that the enrollment would only be to acknowledge that you are a shareholder in these particular corporations. That went on for a few years. And I heard time and time again the same acknowledgement, the same statement being made by our native leaders. Take a look at what's happening now. To be able to gain employment through the Indian preference, they ask you, we need your enrollment number. My birth certificate says my father was Paul Clinkett. My birth certificate says my mother was Paul Clinkett. My daughter, who is 5 years old, there is no indication of my being Alaska Native, no indication of her mother being Alaska Native. And it's been an ongoing process of making it more and more difficult to be acknowledged as being Alaska Native. Gladly, there are agencies, there is nonprofits that have been working on this. Clinkett and Haida enrollment is a very good example. But the acknowledgement is getting harder and harder for us as Alaska Native to prove. Sadly, it is now limited to, or somewhat limited to, what's your enrollment number? Very sad. But I think, as I stated, you know, the gatherings such as this, the United Tribes, the acknowledgement of tribal sovereignty, the abilities of the young coming up to, again, work towards self-determination, the sovereignty issues, are very encouraging. And it's as a result of the technology, the monies that some of the corporations are choosing to put in, the mass media that is growing here, the teleconferences, the audio conferences, are bringing a lot of us together. And it's been good, I guess, hopefully in after 1991, I can sit back and say, it's been a good experience. Sad, but it's been good, because at least we can build by our mistakes. But I really feel that because I've been in working with the alcohol treatment program, working with the young, I feel that I would, I feel because I am here now that I need to speak of the high suicide rates. And it's a very fine line as to the reasons why young people are taking their lives. Young people being 25 and under, with Alaska Native groups, or with Native American groups in general, that is the age group that the young are taking their lives.
Men and women, or both?
There is more men that complete, that have successful suicides, but there are more females that attempt. And the method that females are using in particular is getting more lethal. But as I say, it's a very fine line as to the impact that the Claims Act has done. But I believe in one of your goals, or in one of your statements of existing, is to take a look at this socioeconomic status of the people. The young are taking their lives more and more. I don't expect it to get any better, in particular those born after 71. It's going to get worse for a while. But there are a number of us young people, a number of us Native people in general, that are working, that are here to hopefully buy time. We're looking at the next generation or the generation after to be healthier. And that's a concern, because I heard Dr. Soboloff talk of, I believe it was during the AFN convention, of food uniting the people. Native food will unite the people, because the food comes from the land. The different areas of the state have different foods, and these unite people. Those of us who have chosen to live here have been under tremendous pressure. I can't even recall what that organization is. I don't know if I should even acknowledge the name of that organization, but it's the alliance that the a few non-natives have chosen to join, because they're feeling that Native people get too much. But as I stated, I've lived here a number of years, have worked with young people, and have seen this town grow at a tremendous rate, and continuously getting more and more difficult for Native people to live here. And what's happening here, I don't believe, is any different than what's happening in other areas of the state, no matter what the size. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much for a most thoughtful...
David Sam, shareholder of Sea Alaska, visiting in Athabascan country for about 14 and a half years. Thank you.
Well, a visitor who's obviously doing a lot of good work in this area. Yes, would you, each of you, give your name when you speak?
My name is John Sievertson. I'm not a shareholder. I'm not a native. It's been my pleasure to work with some of the Native Village corporations, though, from a legal and business standpoint. I honestly didn't plan to speak here today. It's been a pleasure to hear some of the thoughtful things mentioned. But I couldn't help but, I guess, given my interest in the subject and to some extent background, I guess, make a few comments that I hope are supportive or at least a different slant, maybe, on what has already been said. I just want to touch on the 14C reconveyance provisions, those issues that arise that I've seen in the village corporations that I've had the opportunity to work with. Can be broken down into procedural, number one, and substantive problems that the Act leaves open. Congress left unresolved, first of all, the procedure that village corporations are supposed to use. Due process requires certain requirements, but what specifically do the village corporations have to do for their shareholders in the 14C application process? What do the applications even have to look like? What kind of hearings have to be held? Due process, if you look at it, the limitations are all over the board. I wish the law would define due process in a way that would allow the corporations to have more of an indication of what they are supposed to do. Congress certainly didn't provide much of a guidance, and perhaps they should be chastised for their absence of doing that. The result is that both the village corporations and their shareholders sometimes are at odds, as some of the people have mentioned here today. The pushes and pulls between the corporation and the shareholders come at it ahead at various times, but one of them is in the 14C reconveyance process. The village corporations try their best, perhaps, to provide a reconveyance policy without much guidance. They try to do their best not only for their own survival, but for the pre-existing prior rights, valid claims of those shareholders. But 14C allows reconveyance to shareholders and non-shareholders, natives and non-natives. And thus you've got another problem as to who the 14C reconveyance process should speak to. Everyone, occupants, native and non-native alike, or should they be administered conservatively to preserve that land for the natives for whom ANCSA intended to benefit? I have my own special, I guess, slant, having had the pleasure of working with Native Village corporations, to feel that those provisions should be administered conservatively.
You're an attorney, Mr. Sievertson.
Yes, yeah. Yes, Judge, I am. To the extent that perhaps is an indictment, though.
No, I just wanted to.
I might want to disavow that, but nonetheless, I guess I am. It reaches the second point, substantively. How do you define the very language of 14C? It requires the village corporations to reconvey that tract of land occupied as of December 1871, occupied as a primary place of residence or as a primary place of business. I've never researched the word A so much in all my life as I have for some of my Native Village Corporation clients.
The word A.
It's incredible. The letter A. Because some of these villages, the occupants will have a variety of tracts of land that they feel they have occupied as a residence. How do you define primary? How do you define residence? How do you define occupied? What's the extent of that? Is it 2 acres, acre and a half, 20 acres, 40 acres? It's difficult. Congress didn't do any favors by not providing any definition of those. Again, occupants suggest native and non-native occupants. If the act is interpreted, if those languages are interpreted liberally, you're going to result in reconveying most, if not all, of the corporation's assets. What are its assets? The land. A lot of people have, and I'm sure we'll talk about, natives' interests, heritage. It's all involved in the land. They don't have a history of grabbing for money like a lot of the white cultures do. Their heritage, their aboriginal right is part of the land. It is the land. And if the corporations define and are required to reconvey to many occupants, native and non-native, they may bankrupt the very village corporations that presumably Congress intended to preserve that heritage, which is part of the land. Like I say, I couldn't help but notice that the 14C issues, both procedural and substantive, are an indication of the sorts of policy considerations that Congress left open and now need to be resolved one way or another. You've got village corporations that were set up, but for what purpose? Presumably to husband, to conserve the native heritage, which is a part, whole and a part, of the land. But that doesn't stop there, because Congress didn't do any favors by not providing any guidance. It's my perspective, if I might suggest that, and I certainly would defer to the natives for whom ANCSA was intended to benefit, to finally resolve these policy considerations, but they need to be resolved one way or another. If the Act is, and its 14C reconveyance language is interpreted liberally, you may result in squandering corporate assets to non-shareholders, resulting in reconveyance of their land to people for whom ANCSA was not intended to benefit. And as a result, the natives will lose their land and the heritage that it represents for them. Or the 14C reconveyance process and language can be interpreted conservatively, and you will preserve not only the corporations from suicide and bankruptcy, but allow them to administer that land and presumably preserve the heritage that ANCSA intended to preserve. If you're going to have viable village corporations, they need to have some asset, and the only asset that they were given was the land. If that land is reconveyed out in a overly liberal and imprudent fashion that is not benefiting the natives, you're going to result in, sadly, result of, it's not so much I'm worried about the corporations, whether they survive or not. The policy considerations have to be made as to, if it doesn't survive, what happens to the natives' land and heritage that it represents. And I hope that some policy, some purpose, some intent of ANCSA can be more carefully delineated, so that the village corporations, many of whom are just beginning their 14C process now, can have some guidance as to how to administer that great trust that has been put in them, in the words of white men, just in their land, but as far as the natives are concerned, it's their heritage.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Severson. Thank you very much.
Mr. Berger. Thomas Sakit Nusangina from Native Village Barrow. I'm I'm just visiting down here, and I'd like to emphasize to the commission that
pull that a little closer to you.
Okay. The epiphany, the Inupiat epiphany, the churchness of Inupiat was evident and was brought forth even in the face of invasion. The Inupiat had that love, good, and truth. When these invaders came upon our land, you know, were brought in and brought back to life. And what more evidence can you ask for in that sense? And another thing I'd like to point out to this commission is the actions which my father, late John Nusinginya Sr., he was with the first state legislature, the beginning of the Statehood Act, and you know, he was in there taking actions for Bear area. But in my view, in my standpoint, his actions were mutinous, judicious, in the IRA perspective. Because Native Village Barrow is still recognized as valid. And that's in submission to my father, in submission to the Statehood Act, is considered mutinous, seditious actions. I mean, from my standpoint. And that's what I'd like to point out to this board here. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Gwen Anagic, and I'm originally from Unalakleet. And what I'm going to say today is just based on my personal opinion of how the Native Claims Settlement Act has both benefited and not benefited the Native people. I've written some notes down, so I'll just probably read from them. The Native people of Alaska has sacrificed a great deal for the Native Claims Settlement Act. Granted, it was one the most generous agreement given to any one Indian organization. It has split up the Native communities. It has caused a great deal of unrest and worry in the Native people presently, that the Native people presently have on the preservations of our culture and existence. It has caused fighting between Native corporations, and also has not protected the Native people from the exploitation of the Native people, both by their leaders and the white community. People are able to play on the innocence of a race to their advantage. It has done nothing for the moral support of the Native people. We are forced to rely on organizations that the Congress has given us. One of the other things is the fact that we have to rely on the Native, or who we appoint as our leaders within the regionals, in order to make crucial decisions about our survival or the survival of our race. When I talk about survival, I'm incorporating the survival of all the regional corporations. There are several that are threatened with the possibility of bankruptcy. There are others. Well, the point that I'm trying to make here is the fact that, you know, how is a bankrupt corporation going to be to my benefit as a person from originally from Alaska? We've also seen the exploitation of regionals for personal gain. It seems prominent throughout our Native community. We as Natives must correct these inadequacies. We have to re-examine our Native leaders to see if they're actually working toward our benefit. I want to tell the Native leaders that they're not working for their personal benefit, rather they're working for all the natives' benefit. They should not select a few to whom should benefit from the ANGSTA. I think that we all should benefit. Also, I would like to address the 160 acres that was distributed originally when ANGSTA had started. I was too young to receive this land, and I feel that I was wronged, since I've lived here in Alaska for about, I've lived in Unalakleet for about 21 years. I did not receive this land, yet the federal government decided to give 160 acres to homesteaders. Now, I ask you, do you think this is right? We've been living up here for so long, yet they give 160 acres to newcomers. The perception that the Native people are wealthy is prominent in the lower 48. This is a deception, I feel. And I think it's there to ease